Welcome. You are listening to a UC Davis Center for Poverty Research Conference podcast. I'm Lisa Pruitt, a center faculty affiliate and the organizer of our November 2014 Poverty in Place Conference. This conference brought together scholars from across the social sciences to present and discuss new work on how space and place inflect various dimensions of poverty. In this presentation, Adrian Hosek discusses Victoria Lawson and Sarah Elwood's work on the neighborhood formation of class, race, and poverty politics. Hosek is an assistant professor of political science at UC Davis.
I'm Adrian Hosek. I'm a professor here at UC Davis as of this fall, so I'm new. And also, I study political science questions about the middle class and redistributional policy. And so the idea that the middle class was very critical in understanding how middle class think and behave is so critical to the poverty, the politics of poverty is for me just is obviously true. Because if you know anything about voting, it's the median voter. Maybe not, but let's say it's the median voter that determines what outcomes happen. So this coalition between the poor and the middle class is the traditional coalition that gets things passed, right? So I found this paper incredibly interesting, and I want to issue a little bit of a warning in that I'm a quantitative person, and that makes me really ill-equipped to provide anything, I think, to evaluate the methodology of the study. But more than that, it was really nice for me to read this paper because it really opens my mind to different ways you could study a question. Okay, but you'll see in my slides that I can't get away from this quantitative aspect of my life. Okay, so we've talked about these two places. One of them is Packdown. And the other one is Spruce Ridge. I think it's Pack Dunn, sorry. And so I could be using incredibly wrong terminology. These are my impressions of the work, and so please understand. So in one sense, in Pack Dunn, I get the sense that it's a place that's gentrifying. It was in hard times in the 1970s, 80s, and then it's sort of coming back, partly because other places in Seattle are becoming wealthier and are pushing out middle-class residents. And so Spruce Ridge, however, is a redeveloped place. It's a place that was previously public housing. That was raised, and then sort of mixed housing was built up on top of that. And so it's entirely planned, and it's planned to be residences for both middle class and poor residents. And so in the paper they interview, I believe 20 individuals, 75% of them are white, and as I said, most of them are college educated, have white collar service jobs and own their own homes. They're also identified through community organizations. And the only reason why I mention this is because in political science, those people who are actively engaged in community organizations are different than your average, generally different than your average voter. They're people who care more about policy. They're more invested in the community. And they tend to have more biased viewpoints, right? More extreme, right? We're not told about the actual political identities of these individuals. So I don't know if they're Republican or Democrat, although I'm assuming actually most of them are Democrat. I don't know why. Okay. So here's the first quantitative insertion to my slides. So again, packed down, but... So we really see these two places are going through a transformation, but there's a difference in the kind of transformation that has occurred. In Packdown, we see a more continuous transformation that's occurring. It's a more organic transformation that's accomplished through gentrification. There are now fewer derelict houses. There's improved safety. There is more home ownership. And there's this anticipation that these trends are going to continue, that this neighborhood is going to gentrify. At least that's the sense I got. In Spruce Ridge, however, we get the sense that it is transformed, right? It used to be public housing, and now it's this other community. And it basically went from 0-1, right? So, and it's described, used to be a slum, no longer a ghetto. That past is behind us, right? We've moved forward from that. We've distanced ourselves from that identity. And I think this is very important to the perception of poor residents among the middle class. In Pacton, we have the first quote, positions persons of a color as a supplement that enhances the normatively white neighborhood. And this is the idea as diversity is an asset, as long as it's limited diversity, right? And that's underlined by the fact that everybody anticipates this process of gentrification. Like, this is not we know that the diversity as it is, if anything, it's going to become less diverse. So it's an asset that we need to protect. And there's very few fears that it's going to reverse the other way. You don't see anybody expressing, well, you know, we need to make sure that more poor residents aren't moving into this community. In this sense, the poor remain sort of separate. They have their own identity. They're pursuing their own individual lives. But their numbers are reducing over time through gentrification. In Spruce Ridge, however, we have this quote, enrolls middle class and poor residents in a collective aspirational project, you know. So here, the poor are integrated in the sense that there is a permanent position for the residents who are identified as poor in the community, right? There's a commitment to their permanent residency in the community. However, their status as poor is hopefully going to be changed over time. So that's what I mean by integrate, right? So they are going, the individuals who are poor will remain within the community, but they will become middle class. And here we see these expectations, we see expectations of hard work attached to this sort of the spirit of the Spruce Ridge community, the goals of those community. So all three of these people value hard work. They see it as really important to accomplishing the goals of Spruce Ridge to transform poor residents to the middle class. And so Louise says, you know, sewing is for job training and not socializing. I thought that was pretty funny. And then Annie says, the women who are really serious about learning to sew, they kind of separate themselves out. So they're already, she's seeing them as already closer to middle class than poor. She is seeing them physically separate themselves out from the other poorer residents who basically she's calling lazy because they want to come here. They want a chance, it's a chance to get out of the house. And don't we all want a chance to get out of the house sometimes? So. We have a non-identified volunteer who says, I'm going to target and focus on people that are just a little step above. And this is an even further statement that says, I'm going to invest my time and effort into those individuals who I see are hardworking, and I'm going to disregard the other ones. I'm going to punish them in a sense. This made me immediately think of an important experiment in political science that I want to talk about, because I think it has some relevance to this finding. So Snyderman and Piazza asked, do political conservatives discriminate against African Americans? Beyond just having prejudiced views of them, are they going to take actions that actually treat African Americans differently than white? And how do they do this? Well, they create unemployment, they generate fake unemployment forms, and they randomize both the race of the individual who's applying for unemployment as well as whether they're described as hardworking or lazy. I don't think it's lazy, but it's lazy. And then the respondents in the survey get to see these unemployment forms, and then they determine what level of assistance these individuals should receive in dollar terms. Okay? And so, you know, Snyderman and Piazza go into this thinking, yeah, for sure we're going to find an effect, right? We're going to find an effect that conservatives discriminate against African Americans. But what do they find? Well, they find that political conservatives are more likely to favor government assistance for black workers compared to white workers. But why is that? Well, there is an interaction effect. And that's the idea that political conservatives rewarded hardworking black workers the most while they punished lazy black workers the most, the least. Well, they rewarded them the least. They punished them the most, I guess. Rewarded them the least. So yes, this is evidence of discrimination, right? But it also shows this thing that I think what we were seeing up here, right, which is in both cases, you know, Republicans sort of see themselves somewhat to some degree as the benefactors of society, right? They're the one paying into the system, right? So they're generally going to have this sort of viewpoint. Sorry, where am I? Oh, here we go. A patronizing viewpoint, right? Which is sort of shared by these people in Spruce Ridge, which are also considering themselves the benefactors of this process, right? They're the leaders who are helping to initiate this transformation, right? Yes, and what you see is that there's a great deal of support for trying to help those poor residents who seem hardworking, because in some part they're not conforming to their expectations and stereotypes of the poor. But among those who are not conforming, you know, they're not toeing the line. There is some idea of distrust, distrust. Yeah. So anyway, let's contrast these with the expectations in Pacton, and you can really just say that there aren't really any expectations in Pacton. So the first is Annie, and Annie is a really warm-hearted woman. You get a sense. She says, "My neighbor has the junkiest yard in the world, and no one complains." Except for Emma, who's standing right there and says, "Yeah, we have lower expectations of our residents." And then Annie says, "No, just different expectations, right?" And so looking at Emma, we see, I'm forced to look at my own assumptions rather than somewhere where the lawns are all nice. And why is she forced to look at her own assumptions? She's forced because the choice of living in that neighborhood was not hers. She was pushed into that neighborhood because she couldn't afford better neighborhoods. And so being in that neighborhood was out of her control. And you see a loss of agency in Marshall's comments, too. Well, good or bad, there have been several things that changed the landscape, right? There have been several things. The passive voice, right? Well, he may have been one of them. So you see a complete, there's absolutely no lack, there's a lack of accountability or taking responsibility for how their community is changing. And I only have 5 minutes left, so I'm not going to really be able to go through this design. It's in Uganda. You're like, why am I mentioning an experiment from Uganda, right? But I actually think it says something very important. So the purpose was to see if does taxation increase citizens' demands on politicians for community investment. So if you're paying taxes, are you more likely to demand more from your politicians than if the politicians are getting their money from outside sources, like nonprofit organizations and stuff? And with the, I mean, those donations are given in the, with the intent of improving the community. So the residents of that community should demand that they're spent correctly. But are they more willing to actually make those demands when it's their own tax money versus the outside money? So when they've invested, are they going to demand more? And in fact, they find a huge, huge effect, which is that taxation increases citizens' willingness to punish leaders by 12% overall, 30% among groups. Anyway, they're more willing to punish, right? And going back to how we think about Pacton and Spruce Ridge, in Spruce Ridge, there has been this sort of commitment made by the middle-class residents who moved there to have this integrated community, which is dedicated to improving, like, the situation of the poorer residents, right? Whereas in Pacton, we see an acceptance of the fact of gentrification. We see in the policies a loss and retrenchment of non-governmental organizations serving the poor, and we see an unresolved battle over new housing residents. So tangible policies have diminished in Pacton. In Spruce Ridge, on the other hand, we see dedicated housing assistance through, though diminished from when it was a public housing project, and job training programs and public recreation facilities. And my question is it inevitable that when the middle class makes investments in programs for the poor or services in the poor, do their expectations and demands on the poor increase? And so I leave that question up, and those are my comments. I really enjoyed reading this paper.
I'm Ann Stevens, the director of the Center for Poverty Research at UC Davis, and I want to thank you for listening. The center is one of three federally designated poverty research centers in the United States. Our mission is to facilitate nonpartisan academic research on domestic poverty, to disseminate this research, and to train the next generation of poverty scholars. Core funding comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For more information about the center, visit us online at poverty.ucdavis.edu.